Hello, and welcome to Viewpoints, a weekly program of information on the ever-changing world of accessibility. Now here are the hosts of this program, Nancy Goodman-Torpy and Peter Torpy.
Hello, I'm Nancy.
And I'm Pete.
On today's show, we'll be talking about food.
Yum.
Everybody loves food. Some people more than others. For the low-tech segment, we'll be talking about shopping for groceries. Our focus item will be actually on cooking. The high-tech item will be about how to obtain recipes that are accessible, whether online or in alternate formats. But first, to our tip of the week. This week's tip of the week comprises some hints for eating. Lots of people ask Pete, how do you eat? Sometimes I just butt in and respond in jest with, well, why do you think he's so thin? But seriously, Pete, how do you eat?
How do I eat? That's a good question. Well, I've learned not to eat carnations. Sometimes you have to watch out a little bit. I went to a down in Dallas with visiting a friend of mine down there for a conference I was going to, and we were out to dinner at a fancy restaurant, and at the end of the meal, everybody's plate was clean, except my two friends each had a carnation on the side of their plate. So we were just wondering where my carnation went. So sometimes you do have to be a little bit careful, and it's helpful to have some hints from people about where the food is, what's on the plate, and things like that.
Many people do that using a clock analogy. So your peas are at 12 o'clock and your spinach is at 3 o'clock or whatever. And that's usually pretty helpful and fairly common practice. But apparently not everybody likes this.
Look, I hate these people. Your peas are at 12 o'clock and your meat is at 3. And this is a blah, this is a blah. I'll figure it out, okay? I didn't get the size of the shape by not being able to find my food. I'll figure it out.
So once you know where the food is, sometimes if you can't see, it helps to get some other tools or whatever to get it actually onto your fork and into your mouth. Well, I've seen you chase your food all over the place sometimes.
Right. Yeah, I often ask for a knife with my food just so I can use that as sort of a stop to push the food against to get it on the fork and stuff. So sometimes when a restaurant will be serving dessert or something, they'll just give you a fork with your cake, and I'll ask for a knife in addition, and they wonder, why does he need to cut his cake?
But if you don't have a knife handy, or if you can't get one, sometimes you can use a spoon or a piece of bread or whatever.
So we also use, when we buy our plates, we try to get plates with rims on them. Sometimes that makes things a little bit easier and not so easy for the food to slip off the edges. So if you can get a plate with a little raised rim or that curves up a little bit and isn't quite as flat, That's helpful.
And also, actually, if you need a bigger rim, some of these catalogs with accessible products have plates that are specifically designed with very large rims.
Right, right. The other thing that's interesting is, sometimes people put a lot of food on a small plate, and I find it a little bit easier if I have a bigger plate with a smaller amount of food. Sometimes if there's a lot of food on a small plate and I'm cutting something, it can slip off the edges, and so I like a little bit extra latitude in how much space I have there. The other thing that's important, and they teach this to kids in college these days when they go interviewing, is to order the right foods. So, for instance, if you're on an interview, you may not want to order the clam that you have to break apart or the lobster that you have to break apart. You might want to order something a little bit simpler to eat, like a steak or potatoes or something. And they actually have classes in many of the colleges these days teaching kids how to eat at a job interview, what's the proper etiquette for that, and how not to make a mess and be such a slob, and that can be very useful.
So if you're going to order ice cream, you're better off getting it in a dish than in a cone if you're worried about who's watching.
The other hint is to get things that are easy to cut if you're ordering some food at a fancy restaurant. So instead of ordering a chicken leg or a chicken breast, you might want to order a boned chicken or, as I said, a steak before. I mean, dealing with some of these things with bones in them can be a real hassle at a fancy restaurant. So I think about things like that.
Well, and then making sure that you don't knock over the glassware. I always notice when Pete's checking out where everything is on the table, he feels pretty close to the table, and then he finds the bottom of the glass. He's less likely to knock them over.
Right. I was always amazed in these. You'd go to a bar sometime, and they'd give you these big, tall beer glasses that are very thin. They're very top-heavy and easy to knock over.
We've done it. Turning now to our low-tech item, we'll be talking about shopping for groceries. We all have to do it, and here are some of the tips we've found for making the trip a little bit more successful and or a little bit more pleasant.
Yeah, some of us don't like it as much as others do.
Right. So the first thing is whether or not he accepts. I always offer to get Pete a cup of coffee on the way in.
That can sort of keep me occupied as we're taking our time going through the store and the checkout lines. I need a little diversion.
The other thing is, you know, it's so loud in some of these grocery stores that Pete's worried about people walking into him. So what do you do about that?
Oh, well, I mean, as with our car, we let Nancy drive. And so generally what happens with our...
Usually a good plan.
Usually what happens is she grabs the front of the shopping cart and pulls from there, and I latch onto the back. So not only can I follow her around and she can do her driving thing and I can be the passenger, but I also don't get knocked around by other people and not getting in anybody's way.
And that works really well.
Right.
What's your next important thing? Oh, yesterday we ran into Steve.
Steve was very pleasant to talk to. He was one of the employees who often gives out the free food at these places.
Are
you going to make the point about
hint.
The free food?
Don't miss the free food.
That's the best part. That and the coffee are sometimes the best part of shopping. Anyway, when I used to go shopping on my own on the weekend, and of course I'd make up a shopping list. So I used to take that down to the store. They were very good about, as I said, just collecting that stuff for me as I followed behind the cart. And then I'd usually put it all in a backpack and carry all my groceries home.
So every once in a while, Pete wants to buy me a treat.
And I have to be careful about that because I can't just wander out on my own often and do those things. But if you just make that suggestion when you're in the store, like I did a couple of weeks ago, that can be a really big thing. So we walked into the store. In fact, I sort of tricked you into going to the store. I said we needed something.
Yeah, and oatmeal.
Was it oatmeal?
Was something really practical. We need oatmeal. We're almost out of oatmeal. I need oatmeal. I can't make it through another day without oatmeal.
So I twisted her arm to go to the store. And as we got in there, I said, you know, you like flowers, and we have some company coming this weekend. We should get some flowers. So why don't you pick out something?
He didn't really want oatmeal at all.
That made a big hit, though, the flowers.
Oh, that was a huge
hit.
Yeah. That was terrific.
So you can do those surprises once in a while, even if you can't drive and get around on your own.
Right. Even if I had to actually pick them out, put them in the cart, pay for them and everything, I give Pete all the credit.
You are listening to Viewpoint, 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 Viewpoint.
This week's focus topic is cooking. We learned early on that I don't like to wash dishes.
And I don't like to cook.
So for the past 27 years, I've been doing almost all the cooking.
And I've been doing almost all the dishwashing.
But every once in a while, there's some reason when one or the other of us has to adapt the other role. And just a couple of months ago, Pete was helping out with the cooking, and he was chopping some carrots with a really sharp knife. And this really good friend was sitting at the other end of the room while we were preparing dinner, because we're never organized enough to have it ready when they show up. And she flipped out, seeing Pete wielding this sharp knife, chopping the carrots. So, number one rule, you can cook, but you got to keep it safe. How do you do that?
Well, you know, the funny thing is, I remember you presenting this question to me about how do you cut? And some of these things I just do or have been doing for years, and I don't really think much about it. You probably have more insight into how I cut. I mean, I'm just very careful. If I'm cutting a carrot, I feel one end with my finger and try to keep my knife, my finger behind the blade of the knife. And just, you know, I don't go like those wonderful chefs do. But, you know, take things a little slower. In fact, you sometimes get frustrated with how long it takes me to chop up vegetables when we're doing like a stir-fry Chinese concoction.
Yeah, it's not quick, but at least I know we're not going to end up with any fingertips in the food. So that's good. I give him some slack on
I
that.
Still have 10 fingers here.
Right, and he's the best at breaking apart cauliflower florets because he's got all the patience in the world. He doesn't care how long it takes. I do. and he can sit there and break them apart and get them just the right size. It's terrific.
It's a real art.
It is.
Well, and I wash most of the things as you do some of the other. We share the jobs in the kitchens, you know, so I participate in the cooking process too. So one thing I found is that, and we've talked about this in other shows also, is, you know, if you can't see, you have some visual problems, is to keep things organized. And so we try to keep, you know, the food and equipment very well organized, everything in its place around the house. So everything in the refrigerator, I know where, what shelf the butter is on, the milk is on, the cheese and where it is and stuff. And they stay in those places.
Until we bought a new refrigerator.
That was an issue. I had to relearn all of my years of training back there.
We did everything we could to put the milk where it used to be and the butter where it used to be. And sure enough, it was impossible. So some things moved, but Pete's pretty smart and he's catching on.
But the same thing for the spatulas and the little slicers for the carrots and things like that. They all have their special place. And, you know, if one of us uses one of those, we put it back where it was. We also talked in a previous show about accessible appliances. So some of them you can get more accessible, sort of out of the box, if you will, than others. And you should look for those features, things that beep in certain ways or things that have buttons located in certain ways. But we've also put Braille on our microwave, Braille labels with a labeling tape and a slate and stylus. Or you can put just little dots on things to know what functions are what on your kitchen appliances.
So back to actually cooking, how do you measure ingredients?
Well, often when I try to use the right size measuring cup for things. So if something says a half a cup, I won't use a 4-cup measuring cup, although you could, you know, feel.
I do.
Yeah, you could feel a quarter of a cup. And there are, if you go to some of these catalogs that sell special things, they have markings on the side that'll, in Braille, that'll show you fractions of a cup. But if I need a half a cup, I'll get the half a cup measuring cup. Or if I need a third a cup, I'll use a third a cup. So I try to get the closest thing to what I need.
And the same with the spoons.
Yeah, the same with the measuring spoons and stuff too. When I'm pouring something, if I'm filling up something like a cup like that with a liquid, it's, you know, with a solid or powder, it's a little easier. Just fill it up and be a little careful. But I stick my finger over the edge of the cup and I can feel the level as it gets near my finger, and as soon as the level touches of the liquid touches my finger, I know I've poured enough.
The other thing I appreciate is that he pours almost everything over the sink. So just in case he misses or gets over enthusiastic filling a cup or a pot or whatever, the excess goes into the sink instead of all over the floor.
It has been known to happen. So that's why I use the sink.
It does, and it's not a problem when it goes into the sink.
Right.
Bigger problem on the floor.
Right.
So, you chopped some stuff, you measured some stuff, you managed to get it into the pot without getting it all over the floor. Now you're going to turn it on. How are you going to know when it's ready to do things?
Well, again, you do have other senses besides your eyes, so listening can be an important thing and feel. So when I get up to the oven, you know, I know which knob turns on which of the pilot lights, and you can hear the pilot lights come on to make sure they came on. If you're boiling some water, you can listen for the boiling of the water. And as a matter of fact, you can even stick a spoon in the boiling water and feel it kind of rattle when the water starts boiling. So there are several ways of doing that type thing. I mean, for the frying pans to know when they're hot enough, I mean, I do the same trick other people do, is to take a little bit of water on my hand and spit it there, and you can kind of hear it bounce back. And from the sizzling sound it makes, you can tell whether the frying pan is hot enough. So use your other senses. And if you smell some smoke, you know things are a little bit too hot.
And make sure you don't leave the handle sticking out over the edge of the countertop, because then anybody could walk into it and knock it on the floor.
That's true.
Okay, so that's kind of nitty-gritty, you know, have to cook something because you got to eat. But there's actually one item that Pete enjoys making. And although, as we keep telling you, I'm the primary cook in the house and I pride myself on being pretty good at it, the specialty of the house is Pete's bread. And people come over, "Didn't you make bread tonight?" It's like, well, no, you know, we're having Asian food and they usually eat rice instead of bread, but... You know, people just love Pete's bread.
Well, and I enjoy making bread. I actually started making bread in graduate school. You know, you're working hard and doing my research during the day and doing some of your homework for graduate school at night. And it was a fair amount of pressure and stuff. And on the weekends, I would just take off and I'd say, I got to just relax my mind, do something to take my frustrations out. And so I started making bread. And it's something that really is pretty easy to do because you don't have to be very careful about the ingredients. If you're baking a cake or something, people tell me if you're off by a little bit or a fraction of a teaspoon, the cake won't rise right or something's going to happen to the consistency. But bread is very forgiving. If you're off by half a teaspoon of salt or yeast or even a teaspoon, the bread's still going to come out. It may not rise quite as much, but it's pretty good. And pounding it around in there can really be a lot of fun.
So we briefly toyed with recording us baking bread at home, but that's like a 3-hour process, and that's not going to fit in a 28-minute segment. So we're going to pretend we're in the kitchen. Okay, Pete, let's get started.
Well, I usually
I'll even help you find your special spoon, which he gets very frustrated.
Oh, my special
spoon.
I need my spoon and my special bowl. So I start out with a big bowl.
A big, heavy bowl that won't move around on the counter when he's pushing at it.
Right. And I usually make 3 loaves of bread at a time because, you know, if you're making one, you may as well make 3 and then you can freeze them. They freeze very well. So I start out with a couple of tablespoons of yeast from a jar. So I'll start out with usually 2 very heaping tablespoons. Sometimes I'll throw in a little bit more. And then I'll throw in a tablespoon of sugar.
That's for the yeast to eat.
That's right. And then maybe about a half a tablespoon of salt, maybe a little bit more. But, again, these things are pretty flexible. And then I throw in 4 1/4 cups of reasonably warm water. Now, you can't make the water too hot. You kill the yeast, but if it's not hot enough, the yeast won't grow. So I throw that in there and let it sit for just a minute or two. You get these fast-rising yeasts, and it starts to foam.
And how warm is the water relative to, like, skin temperature?
You know, I don't, maybe about 100 degrees or so.
So a lot cooler than we make the jacuzzi.
Yeah, I would guess. And you don't want it to burn your hand. If it burns your hand, it's too hot. It should be feel just nice and warm. So anyway, I stir that up and let it sit there for a minute or two. And then I start putting in the flour. Now, most people just put in white flour. And you get some white flour and you just put it in until the consistency is right and it all sticks together. You want to mix in enough flour. I'll start mixing it in with a spoon until it gets so thick that I can't mix it with the spoon. And then I'll use another cup or two of flour until I have to knead the thing and the bread isn't sticking to the bowl or me much anymore, although it does stick a little bit to things.
Oh, come on. You never just put in regular flour.
Well, I was going to say, that's the easy way to make bread. But what I usually do, bread for me is an experiment.
But then you wind up with plain white bread and it's the same every time.
That's true. I usually put in lots of other, I'll put up to maybe 2 or 3 cups instead of flour. I'll put in 2 or 3 cups of other flours, some combination of flax, quinoa, millet. What else do we throw in there?
We throw in bulgur wheat.
Spelt flour.
We recently got turned on to teff. We like going to the Ethiopian restaurant in town, Abyssinia. They make their pancakes with teff flour, which is like a proto-grain. It's not even a regular modern grain. So we got some of that.
Right. We threw that in.
Throw in oats, like regular old-fashioned oatmeal. You can throw in raw oats.
But again, put in, you know, maybe half a cup of oats along with a cup of spelt, but don't add up to more than 2 or 3 cups of this other type flour instead of the white flour. Otherwise, the bread won't rise properly.
And not all of this is actually as powdery as a flour, like millet and quinoa. They're these little teeny balls that are, I mean, they're way smaller than a pea, but it's certainly not a powdery kind of consistency.
The other thing I've been known to do, by the way, is I told you I put in 4 1/4 cups of liquid altogether, but some of that could be, usually it's water, but some of it could be beer, orange juice, milk. Most of it wants to be water, but you can throw in these other things, and I've done that, and it makes some interesting taste. So just experiment. It's a lot of fun. So anyway, you knead it until nothing's sticking much. Split it up into 3 little chunks. Oil the pans pretty well that you're going to put them in, and then you throw it in the oven for I don't know, anywhere from half an hour to 45 minutes, depending on the type of pans you use. Now, if you use aluminum pans, we usually cook them at 350 degrees for how long we stick them in, maybe?
In aluminum pans, we usually do it at about 350 to 375 for about 45 minutes. And if we use clay pans, which have a high glaze on the inside, but they're very absorptive on the outside, and we soak those in the sink first to get them saturated with water.
Soak the outsides in the sink.
Right.
Right.
And keep the insides dry, because if the inside gets wet, then the bread's going to stick. We usually cook those in the oven at about 450 for 35 minutes.
And the advantage of the clay pans is it makes a very good crust on the bread. And tell them your other trick for making the crust.
Oh, the other trick. Thank you so much to Kathy, our bread advisor. Apparently, the commercial ovens have steam jets, but, you know, we just have a house. We don't have a commercial oven. And so what we do is we put in a cup, just a metal cup filled with water in the oven while it's baking. And then for the last few minutes, you have to use a pot holder. You don't really want to burn yourself. You tip over the cup and you spill it on the bottom of the oven, and that generates this puff of steam. You slam the door shut. Well, not hard enough to make the bread collapse.
It's pretty exciting when you do that.
It's really cool, and you get an incredible crust.
Yeah, I have my sighted assistants do that part.
That's right. That's my job. My whole job is to put them in the oven, set the temperature, turn it on, turn it off, and knock over the cup of water. And I've been known to actually ruin an entire batch of bread that Pete slaved over, but usually it comes out terrific. So that was fun. We made bread. We gave you the flakiest recipe you'd ever care to hear. But you can see there was a lot of latitude in there. But let's say you're not comfortable with just kind of winging it, and you want to use a real recipe.
In fact, this is a good place to start for a bread recipe, to get sort of your nominal recipe, and then you can do some of the variations that I talked about. But get one that's a success. Once you have a success, you can build on it.
Right. So we actually frequently search for recipes online. That's why we stuck this in the high-tech section of the show. And I'm going to give you a couple of web addresses where you can look for recipes, and it's great. You know, you want to look for a brownie recipe that has coconut in it. You just type that into the search field, and you'll get a brownie recipe with coconut in it and 47 other variations. And all of these websites work that way. So here are some of the most popular. My personal favorite is Epicurious. So that's www.epicurious.com, epicurious.com. The rest of these are a lot easier to spell. www.allrecipes.com, that was all one word, all recipes. There's www.recipe.com, www.foodnetwork.com. You can guess who that it belongs to. It's the Food Network. And just really simply, if you can't remember any of the others, www.food.com. Or, of course, you can just use any of your favorite search tools.
Well, I was going to say, I've pointed this out to, you know, this show and many people in the past. Let Google be your friend. What I often do is type something into Google, like bread with beer recipe, and, you know, bingo, you'll get lots of different choices of these things. So that's sometimes the easy way of doing things.
Right, if you didn't happen to write down all of those web addresses.
Right. Google's a good thing.
If you don't feel like going online for your recipes, but you'd still like Braille or audio cookbooks, you can go to www.braillebookstore.com. They actually have a toll-free phone number, which is 1-800-987-1231. And if you're not calling from the United States, and apparently this show's been picked up in Canada and by some podcaster in England.
Well, we're international.
We are. you so-called international listeners who aren't in the U.S. can call 1-604-852-6341. And the BrailleBookstore.com, in addition to having cookbooks, also has kitchen gadgets.
And we've talked in the past about the National Braille Press being a great resource of Braille material. Can you talk about some of the stuff they have there? I think they also have a, you can look on their catalog for Braille cookbooks and things.
Oh, they do. They have books about anything, and that includes cookbooks.
Right, as well as computers and everything else.
Right.
But we're focusing on the cookbooks right now.
Right, and that's www.nbp.org. That stands for National Braille Press. Or, in this country, 1-800-548-7323, extension 520. That's their bookstore directly. Or you can get Braille or large print cookbooks from the National Library Service for the Blind and Physically Handicapped. And they're at www.loc.gov/NLS for National Library Service. And they also have an 800 toll-free number, so that's 1-800-424-8567.
But you'll have to be a U.S. citizen for that one.
And you have to sign up for their service, and those are all lent out as a library service. So that's it for this week's show. Next week on Viewpoints, we'll be talking about learning online and at the library. The tip of the week will be that you can get out of the house with lots of events at your local library. And then we'll be talking about listening and learning from tapes, getting lots of information from Google Scholar and online libraries. And the focus item is Overdrive, and that's how I download all of my listening books from directly from the public library. If you have any questions regarding something you've heard about on the show, or you'd like to share an idea for a future show, send an email to reachout@wxxi.org or call us at area code 585-258-0333. We'll try to address your question in an upcoming program.
You've been listening to Viewpoints, a production of WXXI Reach Out Radio in Rochester, New York. This program was hosted by Nancy Goodman-Torpey and Peter Torpey. We hope you'll join us again next week for more information and updates on products for accessible living. If you'd like to hear this program again, you can download a podcast of the show by going to our website at wxxi.org/reachout and clicking on the podcast's link. Thanks for listening to Viewpoints, and have a nice day.